Hey guys, I think that you're wanting to listen to the SmackDown summary from Inside the Ropes, which you're absolutely going to do. Before you do, if you're from Glasgow, one of our hometown people that originally listened to Inside the Ropes, we've got a special offer for you. As you know, Diamond Dallas Page is coming to the UK, and he's coming to Glasgow. He's coming next Friday night, the 8th of September. I'm going to be there. That's enough of a reason to go along. Say hi to me, shout in my face that gender's good, whatever you want to do. But as a special offer, we've managed to get a little deal from the master of the dime cutter himself, because if you buy a ticket now for this event, whether you go VIP or general admission, if you get your tickets by this Sunday, the 3rd of September, if you use the code DDPITR when you go to buy your tickets, you're going to get a classic DDP Diamond Cutter logo t-shirt at the venue when you're there. A free t-shirt for coming along just because you're a fan of Inside the Ropes. So go ahead, buy your ticket, put in the code DDPITR, all caps, and when you go along to the venue next Friday, you're going to get a free t-shirt, a free DDP t-shirt. I hope to see you there. Come say hi. It's going to be cool to hear Diamond back in Glasgow again, where ITR Live all started. So go ahead to ddpuktour.com to get all your tickets. But enough about that. It's time for the SmackDown summary. Here we go. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. Episode number 58. We've been doing this over a year now. And my name is Kenny McIntosh. Joined as always when we're talking SmackDown with Sondra Ruth Wesseldyke Reinstein. Say that three times fast and get it right and you get a prize. A fictional prize, a figurative prize, not a literal prize. Hi Sondra.
Hi Kenny. It's not that difficult. I mean, it's not that much of a tongue twister. It's just long.
It is long. So we're here to talk about SmackDown. We're here to talk about the most recent episode, which is the fallout from the fallout of SummerSlam. And what do you think of the show overall, before we get into actual specifics of it?
Overall, I liked this week's SmackDown. I saw some people weren't very pleased with it, but I thought it was a pretty fun watch. So, I mean, we'll obviously get more into it as we go. But I don't know. I came away from it and was like, no, that was a very fun episode of SmackDown.
I think, I don't think it was a bad episode of SmackDown, but I kind of walked away from it going, I could have missed that. I think that's probably
I didn't think it was full of consequence, but it was easy to watch.
Yeah, and I think, you know, without becoming ranty man as always, I think my main issue is just we're giving away another fucking big pay-per-view main event quality match for the right to fight gender on free TV. Why
next
is this happening? Yes, but we've already given away Cena and Nakamura. We're now giving away Orton and Nakamura. Why don't we just do Nakamura AJ for the right to fight gender at Survivor Series? Just give away all the matches that people would pay to see. So anyway, we kick off, but there was stuff, I feel like it's one of those shows that, for example, if you watch Raw this week, the Reigns-Cena promo is what everybody's talking about, right? Everybody's talking about the... Actually, you know what? Fuck it, I'm going to break the cycle here. We don't usually get let hosts talk about the other shows, but the Reigns-Cena promo, everybody's talking about it. What did you think of it?
Oh, I thought it was excellent. It made me sit up in my chair and actually go, oh, wow. I'm glad I'm watching Raw today. This is insane. Some of the stuff they brought up, I didn't think they were going to bring up. When John, I think my favorite part of the promo was when John Cena brought up the U.S. title situation, how he said he was proud to win the U.S. title at this stage in his career. And he helped it to make younger stars like Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. And, you know, Roman Reigns took the title as a demotion. And Roman Reigns had no comeback to that. Cena walked circles around Roman Reigns. And I did listen to you and David talk about it on the Raw Rundown. I understand your point where you say, this isn't good for Roman. This isn't good for Roman. But honestly, I think in that promo, we saw that Roman's not ready to be the top guy if he can't carry it. That Roman was not good enough to hang with Cena on the microphone. Stumbled, forgot his lines. He sounded overly scripted. Roman Reigns is great, and I'm actually a Roman Reigns fan. But
which is ironic that I'm defending Roman. Level. It's ironic that you're the. But don't you think that Cena clearly had the better material? Like, it's not like Roman, like, you know, what you're talking about, you know, because I actually said this, I just recorded the Power Slam podcast with Finn. It's like, right, okay, so here's a question, just a generic question. How many people over the years can you think of, just off the top of your head, so just name any that you can think of, that John Cena has buried? Because that's a phrase that goes around. Is there any that you think he did in his time on top?
What, like Bray Wyatt and Alexander Rusev and The Nexus and plenty more, I'm guessing.
Okay.
But those are the three that come to mind immediately.
Yeah, they're the big ones, right? They're the really big ones.
Yeah.
How many people has Roman Reigns buried?
No. I don't think he's buried anyone.
Which I think is the problem with the promo, is like it's making Cena seem like he's like, well, listen, after I'd buried like 25 guys, I then allowed a load of young guys to fight me, and I didn't completely you know, squash them. I gave them some time. Which is good. I like John Cena, but like I think it's so problematic that like Roman Reigns, like, see if they'd done this thing where they were like, right, Roman, you can respond to the stuff he's saying and kind of like go back at him. It would have been, but regardless of who people think did better or who had the better lines, it was captivating to watch for sure. So
it was, and I think, I mean, do we know for a fact that Roman wasn't allowed to respond to it?
Apparently, every single thing on that promo was completely scripted. The only line that was not scripted was when John Cena ragged on Roman for getting his lines.
Well, I'm just saying that when they were handed that promo, or when, because I don't think it was like completely like scripted word for word necessarily, they were given the points they were supposed to bring up, right? And when they were given those points that they were supposed to bring up, Roman Reigns could have looked at that and said, oh, well, what if I respond with this about this situation? Like, that's something that he has the pull to be able to do, mm-hmm. you would think, backstage. And he didn't. And part of it is that Roman did bring up some very good points in that promo, but he didn't bring them up emphatically enough. And I think after Cena was like, you know, take your time, kid. You know, it's called a promo. If you want to be the big dog, you got to learn to, you know, whatever, whatever. Then you could tell that Roman looked pretty pissed about that. And it kind of lit a fire under him, and he came back with some passion. But you can tell he's still not that comfortable out there. In, you know, in a battle of words with John Cena, and he looked shaken. And at this point, he's supposed to have been the top guy for 3 years now. He looked shaken. And I think if what Cena was saying wasn't so true, then yeah, I think you'd have a point and say, like, yeah, Roman didn't have the better material. Roman didn't have this. Roman didn't have that. But when Cena comes back at Roman and says, I'm still here because you can't do your job, and we kind of just saw that he can't, I mean, it's telling. It's very interesting.
It's very interesting. I think the thing for me is, like, and remember, I was the person when The Rock came back that I was like, fucking beat Cena, I can't stand him. And that was the wrong.
I was not.
And that was the wrong move. John Cena should not have been beaten by The Rock at WrestleMania 28, just like John Cena should not beat Roman Reigns here, because what John Cena is doing very, very similar things to what The Rock did, which mm-hmm. is coming back and pointing out all the flaws. And if he comes back, points at all the flaws, and then beats him, I don't really know what you're trying to do with that. I don't know what the game would be of that. But it's interesting that people are into the match. So, but and I think so. My point was before I asked you about that was, I think the difference between Raw and SmackDown right now is that while some of the stuff on SmackDown is fun and whatever, nothing's getting anybody talking at the moment,
right?
And that's a problem. And I think there's some metrics that reflect that. SmackDown this week was down 9% from last week's show, which is the biggest dip that it's had since April, which, you know, clearly means that people are not enthralled in what the creative is right now on that brand. Also, part of that's to do with the fact that John Cena is now on Raw, so you've taken away the only guy who really moves the ratings, which is Cena. And then an interesting statistic is that apparently the demo of males between the ages of 12 and 34 was down drastically. Which,
oh, was it really?
I don't know what all that means, but I think it's interesting to kind of get all that information. And it's, listen, I'm not saying this was a bad show. There have been far, far worse SmackDowns. It was just fine for me, but I did kind of watch it going, I come out of it and nothing's really exciting me. You know, like, even like, and we'll get some stuff, but like, nothing's like, there's nothing where I want to go, oh my God, I can't wait for this. Which is a problem, I think. And I'm hoping that there's going to they're going to do something soon that's going to change that. But
I'm hoping in the lead up to Hell in a Cell that they start kind of ramping some stuff up for the pay-per-view, because we still have a month, well, over a month until Hell in a Cell, because it's October 8, I believe. And so, you know, it, on Raw, they're built, because when is No Mercy?
September 24th.
Okay. So is that just, okay, so that's 2 weeks before Hell in a Cell. Yeah. So, I mean, they have, they're 2 weeks sooner to a pay-per-view than we are on SmackDown. So it's more like time to ramp up season, right? Like,
yeah,
it's not like the last couple weeks before it, but they, like, they have a pay-per-view closer on the horizon than we do on SmackDown. So I'll take kind of a fun, easy watch episode that isn't super consequential at this point, like, as long as it's fun to watch. And this one was, I thought there was some really fun stuff on it. So I don't think it's, I mean, not, I want more things to happen and I want more things to matter. And I'm really hoping that they do leading into Hell in a Cell, especially because I'm going to Hell in a Cell. So I kind of have a vested interest in wanting to be good. So it's like,
that's
if
true.
I'm going to a pay-per-view live, then I really genuinely, you know, obviously want it to be a good show.
I mean, the
show.
Thing is, I don't think it can be worse than Backlash. So
I don't think it will be.
That would be,
and
next
I still had
impossible.
Fun at Backlash. So, I mean, there's that.
I had fun at WrestleMania 27. You know, we all have fun at live shows. So let's talk about the episode, though. So also, just to note, Charlotte is back. She did like a video on the website talking about, you know, thanking everybody for, you know, saying prayers for her dad. She did a dark match with Natalia for the title, but she wasn't on SmackDown itself. We opened the show with the Singh brothers, who bring out Jinder Mahal. Jinder sort of plugs the main event, which is going to be Orton and Nakamura as a team against Jinder and Rusev. So Jinder sort of plugs the match, says that no one knows what it's like to walk a mile in his shoes. He's been showing nothing but disrespect as a this is interesting to me, as a representative of the great continent of Asia. So maybe India have wizened to his shiteness. So now he is trying to get the entire continent of Asia to get behind him to see if that makes any difference. But he says
that seems like a very intentional line, because
yeah, it's very like, because that's like me, instead of me going like, there are like 29 people in Scotland who are persecuted, and me all of a sudden going, everybody in Great Britain, you know, like, it's a very clear difference.
Well, no, I'm wondering if he's saying the great continent of Asia, because he's hopefully, if there's any justice in the world, not facing Randy Orton again at Hell in a Cell.
Oh,
right?
Jesus fuck, can you imagine?
It is. Do you understand how angry I would be if Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal is at Hell in a Cell as well? Like, I've already seen that live. I don't need to see it again. Like, I enjoyed it live the first time, but like, no, just no. So he's probably facing Shinsuke Nakamura again. That seems to be where things are going. And so do you think they'll like battle over who represents Asia more? It's not really a story I want to see. That's kind of where my mind went when I heard.
It's funny to me that like Nakamura seems like he will be going in a slight demotion by being in the world title picture. Like, it's so baffling. You know what I mean? Like, usually you go, oh, just get him in the main event. And you're like, no, get him out of the main event. It's worse when he's in the main event. But Jinder, as always, kind of lost his voice during his promo, because he cannot cut a promo without losing his voice. Do you know, just a quick segue. So over SummerSlam weekend, we had a lot of content up on the YouTube channel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where we had interviews with, you know, Braun Strowman, Kurt Angle, Shinsuke Nakamura, and all that sort of stuff. So of all the 8 or 9 videos that we put up that weekend, they totaled 500,000 hits, which is insane, right?
Yeah, it's very cool.
Do you want to know the rankings of who had the most hits? Number one was Braun Strowman with 108,000. Do you know who was number two?
Jinder?
Me interviewing Jinder. 99,000 people watched that.
People are intrigued.
People are idiots. He talked about being disrespected, and then complained about the disrespect shown to the Singh brothers by Nakamura. And then the Singh brothers grabbed the mic. They wanted to apologize for failing gender. And then they both get down to kiss his royal feet. And then as they got down, Nakamura comes out. He comes out, he shoves the Sting brothers aside. Him and Jinder trade blows. But it becomes a 3-on-1 attack. Randy Orton comes out to make the save. But then Rusev comes down to even the odds. Rusev hits the big boot on Orton and then tosses him out. And then Jinder hits his shitey finisher on Mahal. And Rusev and Jinder pose to finish the segment. Was it just me that thought it was strange that, like, because they'd announced what the main event was going to be, it was very clear who was going to be saving who at what particular time. Like, it almost felt like this segment should have created the main event.
Like, yeah, I mean? It did feel like that. It's one of those catch-22s, though, on a wrestling show, right? Do you want to announce a main event and then have it just be sort of paint by numbers, like, who saves who? Or do you want to have it seem like your general manager had no main event planned and, you know, have people attack each other and then that becomes the main event later? Like, I don't know that Rusev would necessarily even come out to save anyone if this weren't the main event. I mean, I guess he is in a feud with Randy now, but I don't know. Like, it didn't bother me that much. It seems pretty paint by numbers. I will say, though, that Jinder's promo is, like, it was kind of the same standard promo, other than he said Asia instead of India. But the Singh brothers are kind of great. Like, I'm really into the Singh brothers, actually. And this week, I was just kind of like, yeah, this is actually kind of fun. I don't know what it is, but, like, having the Singh brother, like, start crying because of how he failed Jinder, and he's getting all choked up, and he's so upset, and they need to kiss his royal feet, kiss the feet of the Maharaja for failing him. It was all so over the top that I actually enjoyed it kind of a lot.
The Singh brothers are really good. It's just who they represent that's the problem.
Well, and I mean, Jinder feels like a star when he comes out. I'm not saying that I think his matches are great. I'm not saying that he should absolutely be world champion material, because he shouldn't. But, like, not everything about it is horrible. So I'm kind of just rolling with the stuff I like.
I think the issue that I found with this episode the most is that I just can't get into it. Like, I just can't. And I've been kind of like, and what was really interesting to me was somebody on the Facebook community, and you can't really judge the whole wrestling audience by our Facebook community, right? Like, that's just not the way you would judge wrestling. But somebody had posted a thing saying, if you could only watch 5 wrestling shows for the rest of your life, what ones would you watch and why? And that was the kind of, that was the question. And most of the answers had SmackDown either not on the list or at number 5. And what's interesting to me is 6 months ago, SmackDown would have been number 2 on everybody's list, or number 1. It had been so high up there. So I'm curious, though, are people not as into SmackDown because of gender like I am, or is it more? So let me ask you, because you're more objective than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Are people less interested in SmackDown because of gender, or is it something else?
I think it depends on what people you ask, because it seems like there are plenty of people who, when Jinder won, were like, I'm done with SmackDown. So I think he's a problem for a lot of people, for sure. I think the lack of consequence overall on the show doesn't help, but I think Jinder plays a part in that. Like, I think the main event scene being so lackluster doesn't help the show at all. Like, it feels very, like, whereas Raw is really top heavy with main event stuff, that's really, really cool, and you're super into it, and some of the other stuff is just absolute shite. Mm-hmm. Like, SmackDown, I would say right now, is solid enough throughout. Like, there's enough fun stuff on it, but there's not a whole lot to latch onto, and because people aren't invested in the main event scene, and because people aren't invested in the WWE Championship, I think for a lot of people that is a hang up. Like, again, for me, it's not as much of a hang up because I enjoy the US title stuff, or I enjoy the Fashion Police, or I enjoy Aiden English. So I still want to watch SmackDown. But I think Jinder being the champion affects the rest of the show more than I really wanted to admit. I think Randy Orton being champion affected the rest of the show as well, because I think he was a terrible champion. And so that, like, since Bray Wyatt lost the title, I think the main event scene has suffered on SmackDown.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what, because like for me, my main thing is that you've got all these like Cena versus Nakamura or Nakamura versus Orton. Like, they're big matches, really big matches, but they're just fodder to feed somebody to Jinder. And you're just like, what? I feel like I've woken up in a, I feel like I've been in a bad dream and I'm not waking up. Like, I'll give you an example. I had a dream last night. Don't know why I'm telling this on air, but why not? I had a dream last night that we did a one-night-only Q&A event with The Rock in Dublin. Don't know why, don't know what the circumstances were. We could only get him in Dublin, and he was very happy. And for whatever reason, we didn't sell that many tickets. We were in like a 600-seater, and we'd only sold 350 tickets. And I was raging about it. I was like, how the fuck did we not sell tickets? It's The Rock. And then the promoter guy that I was working with, he was just like, I forgot to put tickets on sale till 2 days ago. And I was like, what? Like, this is mental. And I'm getting really angry. And I thought, it's fine. We can save it by doing a good show. And then I introduced The Rock and the PA system breaks and his music won't hit. So he has to come out with no music. And I remember just like cradling myself, just being like, this was my one chance to do this really big thing and we failed. But I woke up and that didn't happen. I've not woken up from Jinder yet. I'm still in the dream. And it's so, and it's not that he's like you are right, like there's elements to his character that make him a star. But at the end of the day, like I'm pretty sure that I have friends in my life who are not involved in wrestling, who with 3 weeks training could walk out in a suit and look mesmerizing and talk on a microphone. But they wouldn't, I still wouldn't want to pay to see them wrestle. And I feel with Jinder, it's like, he has the look thing down of the evil menace heel, but that's really it. And in the match, I mean, there's not been a match yet he's had where I've been like, let's call our pals and tell them to start watching wrestling again. But there's just not been anything. So it's, and I think the issue is more, where is the end in sight? You know, so we get Hell in a Cell coming up. That's obviously going to be Nakamura and Jinder. Don't worry, Orton will not be in the match. But it's like, so now we've like, and Nakamura is not going to beat him at Hell in a Cell. It's just not going to happen. So,
but what if he does?
I can't allow myself to get into that trap again. that trap left me depressed at SummerSlam.
At the SummerSlam.
But we're so we're maybe looking at Survivor Series now, and it's like the idea of him with that belt by then is just like, oh my god, like it's just such a noose on the neck of the main event scene. But yeah, I'm gonna try and take some positives out of it. We're getting to see Nakamura Orton, which is great. It's on free TV, which is ridiculous, but
see, that kind of stuff also, like, that doesn't bother me either. Getting to see really big matches on free TV isn't something that bothers me. It's something that makes me want to tune into the show. It's the same argument that people are saying, oh, it's a bummer that we're getting Cena Reigns at No Mercy and not at Survivor Series. And I'm like, well, but doesn't that make you want to watch No Mercy more than it would make you want to watch No Mercy? Like,
I think that there's total validity in that. I think the problem when you have big matches on free TV is that why? So say you watch SmackDown every week, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think SmackDown ever gives you a reason anymore to have the network. There's not really any reason, like. Battleground, like, most stuff that happens on SmackDown, you can just keep up with SmackDown. But the whole idea of having a network where you have events is to, your television should make people want to get the network to watch these shows.
Oh, no, I understand that. You know? I'm just saying that as a wrestling fan, I don't like to be concerned about the business aspect of wrestling. I more enjoy to watch the show.
No, but even as a fan, it's like, so you're going to Hell in a Cell. Wouldn't you rather that they use the television to get to Hell in a Cell so that what they present you is the best thing they can?
Yeah, I do. You know, I really wish that we could have some of these big matches at pay-per-views as well. So, like, some of it does bother, like, okay, I shouldn't say it doesn't bother me at all. Like, it seems baffling that they're doing, like, Cena Nakamura on TV and they're doing Orton Nakamura on TV when it seems like you could build to that in a main event scene, right? But it almost seems like, I think it just goes back to the fact that the main event scene itself is broken right now. And so they're just kind of doing what they can. And it, I don't know, SmackDown is just all sorts of out of balance, like in every possible way, it seems.
I mean, we have a,
the Fashion Police.
We have a women's division where Tamina is more pushed than Charlotte or Becky.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Like, at all. Some of it is that Charlotte hasn't been on TV because obviously she's been with her father.
Yeah, yeah. But even before then.
But even before then, like, I don't. The women's division on this show, oh boy, was I raging. Oh boy.
So anyway, yeah, I don't want to. And I wasn't trying to, like, accost you there of, like, you know, here is my opinion, lordy over. I just mean that, like, I think there is a valid point on the main event scene from a fan perspective and from looking at it as a business perspective.
Well, I think it does hurt it from a fan perspective as well, because some of the things that are going on Raw that are exciting are because we're leading to a really big main event match, right? And on SmackDown, yeah, two really big main event matches.
Like, you're like, you know, people want to see No Mercy because they want to see this blockbuster double main event. And it's like, yeah. I mean, yeah, SmackDown is leading some stuff like Shane and Kevin Owens. But then, like, you know, like, one of the best things on SmackDown is the Fashion Files. But if I take my absolute love and devotion for that out of it, which is very hard to do because I have absolute love and devotion for it, it makes no sense. It's building to nothing, and it's not, like, it's not going anywhere towards, like, a pay-per-view. Now, that's fine because it is supposed to be an undercard thing, but the problem is it's one of the best things on the show. So you'd hope that at least that's going to build to them, you know. So I guess my point is that...
It seemed like originally the Fashion Files were leading to something, because, you know, we were trying to figure out who attacked Breezango and, you know, who was behind all of it. But now I think it got so popular that they're like, no, we really can't have a conclusion to this.
Yeah.
And there isn't a team now that would make sense to have attacked the Fashion Police. And I don't even know if we're really even investigating that anymore. I'm not sure. Because we thought that the person who attacked Tully the Horse was going to, you know, be the person who attacked them originally. But it wasn't Arn Anderson that originally trashed The Office. It was just Arn Anderson ripped up the horse because it should have been named Arn, which was hilarious.
And we'll get to the Fashion Police, Fashion Files, because they had a great line this week, which is probably one of my favorites they've ever done. But yeah, I think what I'm curious about, please, listeners, like, I'm going mad. So please get in touch. Twitter, Sondruth, RW, KennyMC1985, Inside_TheRopes, or on the Facebook community or whatever. Like, get in touch with us somehow and let us know, how do you feel about the SmackDown main event scene? Like, is the SmackDown main event scene what's hurting the show? How do you feel about the big matches being given away on TV and not building, you know, not building to, you know, it's like Battleground wasn't headlined by Cena and Nakamura, it was headlined by Orton and Jinder. But it did bring us Kali, so I can't really shit on that too much. It did bring us the glory of his return.
But it was like 20 minutes of nothing before that.
It was horrible before that. But anyway, so we've talked about that for a long time. I should move on. So up next, we get the announcement is going to be Nakamura and Orton next week, with the winner receiving a WWE Championship match. I mean, it is a blockbuster match kind of thing. And I think that Nakamura is the sort of guy that I imagine if this was like a program that was like, that was headlining a pay-per-view, I think this is the sort of thing that would motivate Orton to have one of those really good matches that he has now and then when he can be bothered. When he can be bothered. So we get the Ascension taking on the debuting team of Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. The match goes about 9 minutes. Gable and Benjamin seem to work pretty well together. Lots of suplexes and high-risk moves from Gable and Benjamin. And in the end, Connor breaks up a cover, but he gets sent out by Chad Gable. And then Chad shoves Victor into the... What's the move called by Benjamin that he did at the finish? Has he got a name for it?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Hang on, I'm going to find out what the name is.
This is like one of the first Shelton Benjamin matches that I've ever seen.
Okay, apparently it's called Pay Dirt.
All right.
So he hits the Pay Dirt on Victor and gets the win, 1-2-3. So what did you think of the debut of Chad Gable and Shelty B?
I really enjoyed this a lot. Like, I haven't seen that much of Shelton Benjamin. I've seen him in like a couple Money in the Bank situations, or I'm pretty sure I've seen like a tag match or two with him and Charlie Haas, but I haven't seen that much of his career. But I was excited for him to be back because I've always heard that he's really good. The couple things I've seen have been really good, and this definitely didn't disappoint. I think he and Gable did work well together. I was almost like, I know last week I was really hoping for overenthusiastic Chad Gable, like having to kind of court Shelton Benjamin the way he did Jason Jordan. And it doesn't seem like we're getting that necessarily because they seem to just kind of be a team and be solidified with that. But they worked really well together, and I feel like they got a better reaction as Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable than Jason Jordan and Chad Gable ever did. Maybe it's because people remember Shelton. Maybe people are excited to see, you know, whatever. They don't have a team name, right? They're just Shelton Benjamin and
just
Chad Gable.
Gable and Benjamin is their time trunk says.
Yeah, so, I mean, Gable and Benjamin, like, they're working well together. It was fun. I didn't realize how much goodwill the Ascension had built up just by being on the Fashion Files and being kind of awesome lately on the Fashion Files, because like, it's not like I wanted the Ascension to win, goodness no, but I was like, this Ascension match is actually really fun. I'm glad the Ascension are on TV to lose to Gable and Benjamin. So the whole thing worked for me. I thought it was a great showcase for the new team. Lots of cool moves, lots of cool stuff that they do. I mean, I'm always going to be a huge Chad Gable fan. He is one of my favorites, so it's great to see him getting a spotlight and getting a reaction, because I don't feel like American Alpha ever did, and I don't think that was necessarily down to them not connecting with the crowd as much as it was the booking. Like, they got the number one contendership and then, you know, had Chad Gable pretend to get injured for some reason and then got taken off TV forever, and then they were just kind of dead in the water, right? So it's nice to see this sort of reboot might work better on SmackDown than the original, which pains me to say because I'm an American Alpha fan and I really do like Jason Jordan. It makes me feel bad for Jason Jordan. Like,
yeah, I kind of feel there's a positive and negative to this. Like, the positive is it's the best thing that Shelton Benjamin could be doing, but yeah. If I'm 100% honest, I would rather see the guy who's in his late 20s who should be in this position with Chad Gable as that tag team being pushed, and not bringing in a 40-year-old guy and having the other guy be an illegitimate son on Raw where it's not working. So it's one of those things, like, ideally, I'd just rather we had American Alpha, to be honest. Like, that's kind of what I want, but that ship sailed, apparently, so Jason Jordan's now going to have to, you know, he's been chucked off the Titanic. I don't know if he'll make it. We'll see. And Gable's been flung a lifeboat with Shelton Benjamin, so
this whole thing has just been really like a huge disservice to Jason Jordan. I feel bad for him. I hope he can make something out of it, but
I hope he turns heel and, like, you know, people always go, Roman Reigns and The Rock have got similarities. I hope that Jason Jordan can channel all of the shitness that he's been given and turn heel and do something good with it.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think that's his best chance.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. We cut backstage to Renee Young. She's interviewing Baron Corbin, who apparently, oh, it's so good. Baron Corbin has got a plaque on WWE.com or WWEshop.com of him winning the Money in the Bank with part of the map. But apparently they photoshopped more hair at the front of his head. It's amazing.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Oh, bless.
Anyway, he talks about, you know, he didn't squander his opportunity. John Cena distracted him and then ran off to Raw before he could right a wrong. I mean, he could have written the wrong at SummerSlam, but he lost. But that's life. He's going to move on, and he's going to try and go for that open challenge for AJ Styles. That leads us to AJ, who comes out. He's saying the US Open Challenge is back. Ty Dillinger comes out. Big return for Ty. And as he comes out, then he just gets clobbered by Baron Corbin. Corbin then jumps the apron, but Dillinger gets him from behind, knocks him down, and then Dillinger gets the ref to ring the bell. We've got the match, AJ versus Ty, but Ty, of course, is a bit too overenthusiastic, which ends up with him in a calf crusher 2 minutes into the match and him tapping out. Baron then disposes of Ty Dillinger and then goes in to try and take out AJ Styles, but AJ kind of easily retreats and gets a one-up on Corbin. So I guess we're heading towards Corbin and AJ. How did you feel about this match segment in Schmoz?
This was a roller coaster of emotion.
Oh, for fucks.
Because... No, it was. Because, first of all, yay, the United States Open Challenge is back. I'm so excited about that. And I genuinely am. Like, I really liked John Cena's Open Challenge. I was really looking forward to AJ's Open Challenge as well. Like, who could come out? Who knows? And then I just expected it to be Baron Corbin when he was giving the interview. So I was like, okay, fine. It's just going to be Baron Corbin, which doesn't make sense if you're trying to build to Baron Corbin versus AJ Styles. I've gone on about how little I like using a match to build to the same match, right? So then Ty Dillinger's music hit, which I didn't know was going to happen. So I got so excited, like the most excited, right? Because I'm like, yes, 10, he's on TV. Like the only person that would have made me more excited in this position would be Luke Harper, which had better fucking happen soon, WWE. I know you're not listening, but like if you have an open challenge and Luke Harper does not answer it sometime soon, what even are we doing here? I don't understand. But so I was super excited about Ty Dillinger, and then Baron Corbin comes to ruin our lives, because of course he does, because he's the worst. So then I was angry, and then so I thought that he was going to take Ty's place. But then when Ty Dillinger just like punched Baron Corbin in the face and was like, no, fuck you, I am doing this match, ring the bell referee, I was like, yes, we're finally getting AJ versus Ty. And then it was such a letdown when the match was over in 2 minutes, because I really wanted to see AJ Styles versus Ty Dillinger as a proper match. Like the US Open Challenge, I almost just said historically, it's not like there's that much of a precedent. It's only John Cena that's done it. But like when John Cena did the US Open Challenge, he had these great killer matches with, you know, younger stars and really helped them out and made them look great and put them on a showcase. And this wasn't that. This was basically just an angle, and Ty Dillinger just still looks like, you know, guy who's barely on TV and can't win, which maybe is his role, but like, wouldn't it have been really cool to see AJ Styles versus Ty Dillinger in a competitive match? I mean, there's nothing that leads me to believe that Ty Dillinger should be beaten in 2 minutes. You know, he's not, I don't see Ty Dillinger on the same level as like, if Victor from The Ascension were going to go in there against AJ Styles, or like even my beloved Aiden English. Like, I don't sigh at me.
There's only so much I can take, Sandra. There's only so much silence I can have.
I'm just saying, but like, you know what I mean? I feel like Ty Dillinger could have a competitive match with AJ Styles. Like, he was not the champion in NXT, but you know, he was in a pretty prominent position when he left NXT, and on SmackDown, he's still been presented as like, he's a competent wrestler and a competent guy. So I was really disappointed that this wasn't more of a match, because I think it could have been something really cool.
Yeah, I agree. I wish Ty had got some more time, but we'll see. It takes us into backstage Jinder trying to buddy up to Rusev about, you know, Bulgaria and India can beat America, and Rusev just kind of shuts them down, which, you know.
Did they ever once mention that they used to tag together?
No, and I was quite happy with that, because I don't ever want Rusev to have to talk about it. Like, let's not remind people that Rusev went through that difficult point in his life. You know, let's let the man move on. Let him just prosper, Sandra.
Well, I mean, we're not letting him move on if we're putting him back with his old tag team partner.
He doesn't want to be there. That's the key. Now he's seen the light.
Well, I mean, he did dispose of Jinder quite handily, right? Like, isn't that how their tag situation ended? I wasn't always watching Raw.
Yes,
but
it did also have the fast lane match that with Cesaro and Jinder, which felt longer than David's dad dying a death of cancer over 3 years.
That's right.
Mike Kanellis is in the ring back on SmackDown against Bobby Roode. Kind of, you know, relative squash match for Bobby Roode. Wins in about 3 minutes. Not really much to say, just kind of Bobby Roode getting a win. Again, there's not really much to say about Bobby Roode yet, because they're slowly kind of building it, but I'm looking forward to seeing where he goes and who he feuds.
Babyface Bobby Roode is interesting to me. Like, Bobby Roode as a dickhead babyface seems to be where they're going with it. And I know a lot of people are raging about this, like on Twitter. I know like David McCutcheon, for instance, who wasn't even watching the show, was like, this is the worst decision in the entire world.
Standard David.
Standard David. I don't know that it's the worst decision in the entire world. I don't know how long Bobby Roode's going to stay a babyface. And I like the fact that he's not really changing his character, because he's still a dickhead. Like, he's just smiling about being a dickhead now. So he's...
Him and Charlotte are quite similar in ways.
They are. I was just actually going to say that. I was going to say it's very similar to the Charlotte Flair sort of babyface turn that they've done where he still feels like Bobby Roode, and people are going to cheer Bobby Roode anyway because of his entrance. So I think it's actually kind of working for me. Like, it's going to take some getting used to that he's a babyface, but they put him against Mike Kanellis here, and Mike Kanellis is a heel. Kind of a shame for Mike Kanellis that he really is just nothing now on SmackDown all of a sudden. Like,
there's a lot of guys like that.
Yeah, and that's one of the frustrations of SmackDown, I think, because, you know, Mike didn't get a full entrance. He was already in the ring. We didn't get to hear the full glory of his theme tune with Maria on this episode of SmackDown. It's kind of a bummer that they just gave up on him so quickly. Like, I saw the post on social media earlier this week where Maria talked about how, you know, he's recovering from pill addiction and everything. And I think that's great. Like, he's, I guess, 2 months clean now. And that's excellent. Like, really good for him. And it's kind of sucks that it's like, okay, like, he overcame addiction, he's like getting better and all this stuff, and they just kind of give up on him. Like, I don't know. It kind of sucks.
Hopefully he'll get an opportunity soon. We move on to Sondra's favorite and a man who makes me roll my eyes every single time, Aiden English, who has one of the worst haircuts I've ever seen of any man on any roster. Like, either shave it or, like, just do something. It's not happening. What's going on? Anyway, Aiden English is singing.
You know, he's I love him.
Oh, good God. He could murder someone, you'd defend him.
I would not defend him murdering somebody.
If he murdered gender, you probably would. Anyway, Aiden English is in the ring, singing. He's interrupted by Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens is just like, you know, get out. Like, just leave.
Very upset with Kevin Owens for interrupting his song.
I was very, very thankful for Kevin Owens and everything that he brings to the table. He said that he's out here. He wants to talk about what happened, obviously, with the last week with AJ Styles. Shows the moment on the screen. He said this would never have happened on Raw because Stephanie McMahon would never abuse her power.
Has he met her?
He called SmackDown a joke, not the land of opportunity. It's Shane McMahon's personal playground. Shane comes out and he's like, listen, I'm just going to let you know what really happened. You know, I counted a proper 3 count. You lost fair and square. I had no choice but to step in. Everyone's tired of your complaining. Now, can you please get out of the ring so Aiden can get back in and face his opponent, who is Sami Zayn. So Sami Zayn and Aiden English have a match while Kevin Owens is on commentary. But then midway through the match, Kevin Owens just decides, nah, that's it. Gets in the ring, forces the referee to give him his referee shirt, puts it on. He's now the referee. He then attacks Sami and hits a pop-up powerbomb, and then Aiden English goes for a pin, and he fast counts. So Aiden English gets a win with new music, and
I like the new music.
I was pausing for shock there.
I really do, though. It's fun minor key opera music. I think it's, like, I really enjoy the Vaudevillains themes, both of them. But I think it's good that he's moving away from the Vaudevillains theme and getting his own sort of operatic music now. I doubt we'll get to hear the music very often, so I'm reveling in it while I can. Don't take away my fun.
And he got a win. He got to beat Sami Zayn. And Kevin Owens got to be a bad referee to prove a point to Shane McMahon. I thought this, as a story, just the whole thing was pretty decent. It was pretty fun. Kevin Owens is just the best. The best.
Kevin Owens is great. Kevin Owens also has a point. Because, I mean, like I said about the whole Baron Corbin being the special guest referee situation, everyone agreed on that stipulation. No one said that the special guest referee had to be a good referee or a fair referee. It was, I get to choose the referee. So I still kind of have an issue with Shane McMahon coming down and taking the referee shirt from Baron Corbin and becoming the referee. It did set a precedent that if apparently now the rules are, I mean, I feel like we're going back to 1997 levels of referee rules right now. Because apparently if you just take the referee shirt during the match, you become the referee automatically. Like, that's how this works now. I mean, Shane McMahon set the precedent, so I don't blame Kevin Owens for doing it. I think it's like the perfect smarmy dickhead move of Kevin Owens. But I mean, I was kind of on Kevin's side on this whole thing. It was like, no, Shane shouldn't have taken the referee shirt from Baron Corbin, whether he was being fair or not. Like, Shane really shouldn't have inserted himself into that. Like, sometimes he does stick his nose into everybody's business a little too much. And I like Kevin Owens being the referee. I mean, it sucks to see Sami Zayn, like, lose, but also it's so perfect that of course Kevin Owens would attack Sami Zayn of all people in a match. Aiden English now has 2 wins over Sami Zayn, which is bizarre. It was really fun to see Aiden. I was almost not going to bring that up because I didn't want to remind you and make you angry, but like, I don't know.
At least this time it was part of a story.
Yeah, this time was better, right? I was going to ask if you were angry about this or if it worked for you because it was part of a story. And it wasn't like Aiden English just beating Sami Zayn, obviously. Like, he was handed the win by Kevin Owens because Sami Zayn got hit with the pop-up powerbomb.
Yeah, I was fine with this. Didn't bother me.
Okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed it as a story, as an angle. I like Aiden's new music. I don't know. It was fun.
And Owens and Shane continues to be probably the best feud on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. We get the Usos coming out. They're going to face the New Day. They have a relatively short match, goes about 5 minutes. And in the end, the Usos get the win. Obviously, Xavier's got his knee injury, but obviously this was nowhere near their matches at Battleground or SummerSlam, but I guess they're just keeping it going so they can stretch out to Hell in a Cell.
I just would like to see them face other teams. Like, I understand that this match had a purpose in that they can choose the stipulation for, and they said for their rematch, they didn't clarify whether that's going to be at Hell in a Cell or not, but part of me wants it to be at Hell in a Cell and for them to choose like 2 out of 3 falls.
I mean, how are they going to keep that going for 6 more weeks to get to that?
I don't know, which makes me wonder if it's not going to be at Hell in a Cell, like if the match is going to be on TV.
Yeah, I mean, just give it like the second hour of SmackDown 1 week. Just give it that. Just, it'd be good. Backstage, James Ellsworth with Carmella. She's talking about the plan for her briefcase. Natalia comes up and says that she was lucky. She's lucky that Ellsworth stooged it off because she wouldn't have made her the female Baron Corbin. Carmella.
That was a great line.
It was very good. Carmella said that, well, they had a match next week, so, you know, keep your title warm. Naomi then walked up and said that, you know, you might have a match with Carmella next week, but in 2 weeks, I'm going to have my rematch right here on SmackDown for the title. And Natalia just seemed genuinely annoyed that she's got so many challengers, which I thought was like, I don't know why, and it's not that Natalia's got much better, but I kind of do dig her as champion at the moment. Like, I do kind of like the fact that she's just like, I'm the Queen of Hearts, and her cat t-shirt is outstanding. It's such a good shirt. And then, like, I love the idea that she's like, I don't want to fight people for my belt.
Right?
That's not why I want to be champion. I just want to be champion.
She's like, I finally got this again. I don't want to have to do anything about it now that I'm champion. Like, I just want to rule my roost and have cats or whatever.
Exactly.
Did you see the tweet that Tyson Kidd put out about the cat shirt?
No.
It was funny. He was like, I'm pretty sure I started all this 3 years ago when Tupaz wasn't even around or something. He's like, his ego's going to get huge. I don't remember the exact wording, but it was funny. And I was like, yes, you did start all this 3 years ago, Tyson Kidd. I remember that.
And do you know what I want to see? Like, I want to see, and I know you're not probably super keen on it, but I want to see Natalia and Charlotte in a little program because I think they could be good. I think that I like the idea that, like, the story's quite easy. They had the match in NXT when Charlotte was on her way up. They've got the kind of family histories. Like, I think it could be fun. And it could be
something. I think we've seen it plenty enough for me, but it could be.
Because I like the idea, like, maybe, like, Naomi and Carmella, like, they don't just get the title. Like, maybe Natalia, like, beats them both. And then they have to kind of get to the back of the line. But, you know, I guess there's different things that could happen. And then
I like that there are multiple people wanting to challenge for her belt too. Like, it's nice that there are multiple contenders and people are vying for it. I feel like that's something we don't have in the men's main event scene, is multiple people wanting the championship. And maybe that actually could be part of the reason that SmackDown is suffering as well. Maybe it's not just Jinder as champion, but also everyone else's seeming disinterest in the title. Like, I know we're getting Randy versus Shinsuke for the chance to face Jinder for the title, but does it seem like anyone's really clamoring to be champion at this point?
I think the issue is, like, so, like, same with Raw, right? Like, in my head, there's like 7 or 8 Brock Lesnar matches that I'd love to see. You know, Braun and Brock, Brock and Cena, Brock and Joe again, Brock and Balor, Brock and Seth. You know, there's all these different ones I'd like to see. But on SmackDown, there's not one gender match that I want to see. There's not one.
It's No, there are multiple people that I would like to be champion instead.
Yes, exactly. And then we get... Oh my god. That is the vacuum of my caring about wrestling being taken away by fucking Lana. She comes out with fucking Tamina. Now, I want to give Tamina some credit here. Not for anything she did on this show, of course, because why would you give her credit for that? But Rick the Sign Guy made a sign, and I think it was from last week. Let me just find it here. Yeah, so basically Rick the Sign Guy made a sign. You remember when like Lana was saying, you know, channel all your energy and da-da-da-da-da, all that kind of stuff. And Rick the Sign Guy made a sign of that face five different times and said, Tamina's acting, happy, sad, mad, excited, confused. And she retweeted it saying, so you think you know me, with a laughing emoticon. So, with hashtag Tamina's emotions. So, Tamina gets a free pass from me this week because she has banter. however, Lana, you're the worst, you know, the only thing worse than seeing Lana wrestle is having Lana have a live mic while Tamina beats somebody. Oh my god. Cut the mic! Cut the fucking mic!
It's not good. And also, another issue that I have with this, right, is I don't understand what they're supposed to be. Like, are they supposed to be heels? Are they not supposed to be heels? And this is just a problem with Lana in general. And following Lana on social media is also infuriating. Like, she is fucking insane. And I just... Lana. But, I really don't like her right now. But are they... If they're supposed to be heels, Lana's whole thing... Like maybe it was a Fallout video where they were talking about it, or maybe it was an interview, I can't remember, but where she's talking about, like, you know, we're women and we're going to build each other up, and, you know, it's women supporting women. And I love the idea of a woman having a female valet, because that's not something we get to see, like, ever on WWE TV, right? It's cool. Like, it's a really cool concept. The problem is that it's, you know, Lana, and it seems like they're supposed to be heels, but then everything she's saying seems super babyface because she doesn't actually want to get booed, it seems. It seems like she almost suffers from Stephanie McMahon syndrome, where she is supposed to be a heel and wants to be this bad guy, but also doesn't actually want to be a bad guy and wants to, like, claim women empowerment and all this stuff. And, like, I don't know. I don't even want to get into her online battle with Nia Jax earlier this week because it was just bullshit. But, like...
I've not even seen this, so...
Have you not? No. Like, where Nia Jax just put out a thing that was really nice, you know, because Nia Jax is always putting out, like, really body positive stuff. Like, hey, you know, anyone who's told that you're, like, big and, you know, you can't do what you're going to do because you're too big or you're not the right shape or whatever, like, you know, that's why I'm blazing my own path or something. And Lana just, like, took it upon herself to be like, body shaming comes in all shapes and sizes. You know, I'm always told that I'm too small.
Oh, dying of fire.
Yeah. So, and Nia was just kind of like, all right, so you're taking my heartfelt post and making it about you. Awesome.
Did she say that? Amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, she did.
The thing that's funny, like, is, well, it's not funny. If you want to see, like, the absolute cretinous part of wrestling fans, don't read any comments on anything related to the Mae Young Classic. Like, I don't really get angry. You know what I'm like? I'm not really, like, very rarely am I like, yay, feminism. Not that I'm not feminist, but, like, you know, sometimes there's the over-feminist train, which I'm not really that keen on, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, somebody had posted about Piper Niven, who is a friend of mine, right? Number one. And they were posting this fucking awful stuff about, she's so fat, how can she even be an athlete? And I'm just like, you absolute pieces of shit. Just because she is bigger built does not mean that she can't be an athlete. I see you, a Kevin Owens, a Bam Bam Bigelow, a Yokozuna, you know, fucking Big Show. They're athletes, you know. It's not, you don't have to be fucking skinny to be an athlete. And by the way, I am 99% positive the fucking scum that make those comments are the guys who've either got tiny dicks, fat bellies, or low IQs. So please take them all and shove them up your arse, because nobody really needs your opinion.
Comments on anything that female wrestlers do are always disgusting. Always.
Well, not always.
Not always, but, like, You will always find disgusting comments. I'm not saying all the comments are disgusting. I'll make a joke. You'll always find them.
I'll make a joke like Lana belongs in the kitchen, but that's genuine because I think Lana can make a better meal than have a match. It's not a criticism. It's just a fact. You know, it's factual's fine. It's just slander that's a problem. Anyway, before we get the main event, we get the fashion files. They are back. It's back to basics. Fandango has an unlimited supply of glasses. Sunglasses, that is. They have a really cool intro. They have some police tools on the table. And Breeze is like, you know, this is a... He picks up like a flashlight and he's like, this can show light or whatever. And then there's like a belt. So like a regular like belt to put around your waist. And Breeze is like, do you know what this is? And he's like, it's a championship. And he's like, no, it's a belt.
Hold up your pants.
In the best line I've ever heard. And the thing that makes me laugh is Vince will have approved that, so it makes me laugh even more. That he's, like, approved a line that makes fun of his own, you know, wordings.
Yeah. No, it was the best. It was absolutely the best. I laughed so hard.
It made no sense, and it didn't really seem to go anywhere, but it was a fun 3 minutes, and I enjoyed myself, and I love them. And when Fandango was, like, kept putting sunglasses on, and Breeze is just looking at me like, what are you doing? It was so good.
And what did he say? He's like, where did I put my sunglasses or something? As he just put on two pairs of sunglasses and has another one hooked to his shirt. They're so good. They're so good. Like, I never want these to end. And, you know, I remember 2 weeks ago when you were trying to tell me, is this the end of the fashion files? The fashion files are done. And I was like, no, they are not done. They are not done.
Thing is, it's always better for me to try and prepare you just in case.
But I refused to believe it. And my hope was fulfilled. Because this was amazing. I loved it.
Main event time is so underwhelming to talk about. Like a 15-minute match with Nakamura and Orton against Jinder and Rusev. I just couldn't keep any attention for this. I don't know why.
Because it was Nakamura and Orton versus Jinder and Rusev.
Like, in the end, Nakamura hit the Kinshasa on Rusev for the pin. They got the 1-2-3. Nakamura and Orton got the win. But after the match, Orton and Nakamura are celebrating when Orton hits Nakamura with a killer RKO out of nowhere. Nakamura sold it like he'd just been shot. Oh, it was so good. Which, again, this is the problem, Sandra. At the end of it, I get really excited and I go, oh, but I'm only excited about the thing that leads up to the guy. Like, it's always the case. So I'm really excited about next week to see Nakamura versus Orton. I just don't want to see where it's going to go from there.
See, sometimes it's best not to think about the future. Like,
what a great way to watch wrestling. Sometimes you just don't think about the future.
It kind of is, though. Yeah, sometimes you just don't think about where it's leading. Like, the Lana Tamina stuff, like, some of it's actually kind of interesting to me. I'm annoyed with Lana at the moment, so that doesn't help. But, like, some of it, I like the idea of the story. But Tamina eventually getting a championship match? Fuck off, no. But if I don't think about that, like, if I just think about, what about week to week? Can I enjoy a little bit of this? Then it makes it less maddening, for sure. And, I mean, the idea of any of these people facing Jinder might not be that exciting, but sometimes maybe I do need to think about the future in that situation because eventually someone has to beat him, right?
Exactly. You are correct. Somebody does have to beat him eventually, and I just hope that day is soon.
I hope so as well.
Where is your thumb for this episode?
My thumb is up for this episode. I mean, as we're talking through it, it seems like it should be a thumbs in the middle, but I did maybe thumbs in the middle. I'm not super sure. Like, I did enjoy watching it, though. So middling to up. There was nothing, like, egregious that I was annoyed by.
My thumb is in the middle because I feel like if I was to just... And I don't mean this in a belittling way at all. I just mean it as just my own personal opinion. If I was to reward or sort of say that I think that the storylines that they're doing are good, it would be me basically being okay with mediocrity. And I just don't feel like I can endorse that. Like, I don't think that the main event scene is very good. I'm not crazy that Jason Jordan's had to leave so that we can bring in a 40-year-old guy to team with Chad Gable. I'm not crazy that Ty Dillinger got no time. I'm not crazy that Mike Kanellis hasn't really been used. I'm not crazy that Bobby Roode's kind of on the mid-card not doing much. Those things are frustrating, but at the same time, I'm baffled that Tamina and Lana are getting as much time as they are, producing such little results. But on the other side, we are going to get Nakamura Orton. The opening segment was pretty decent in terms of all the people coming out. Fashion Files was great. The AJ, so the Kevin Owens Shane stuff was really good with Sammy and Aiden English. And yeah, so I'd be thumbs in the middle for this one. And also, big shout out to Sami Zayn, who has raised $70,000 for Syria to get a mobile unit for mental health.
So that's very cool.
Very, very big congrats to him. And if this show keeps going the same way, he might need to raise money for one for me in Glasgow. If gender stays champ. Sandra, where can we find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
Remember, tomorrow, 3 p.m. UK time, tickets for the London, Manchester and Glasgow Shawn Michaels shows go on sale. InsideTheRopes.co.uk. If you're interested in the Ireland shows in Dublin or Belfast, it's Ticketmaster.ie and just search for Shawn Michaels. Those go on sale at 9 a.m, not 3 p.m. Hope to see you all there in January. And we'll be back next week with another bonus Retro Raw episode. We talk about Friday night's main event and with more SmackDown. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Good looking, every hair in place. Everyone loves this gorgeous face. You can't deny my beauty shot. I'm everything that you are not.